Welcome to the Just Race podcast. Our guest on the show today has a pretty incredible story. A few years ago, he was a chef at a restaurant in New York City, biking to work every day. That inspired him to start an electric moped sharing business, which if you've been in New York, you may have ridden or may have heard about. And today, 4 years later, he just raised $126 million from BlackRock and Toyota for an electric vehicles infrastructure business. Our guest today is Frank Regg, founder and CEO of Revel, the electric mobility company. Revel has come a long way from the blue moped business. It now has a ride-sharing business that competes with Uber, except instead of Uber drivers and their cars, it's Revel employees in bright blue Teslas. And they're building the city's largest electric vehicle charging station in Brooklyn right now, with plans to roll out more in cities across the U.S. It's a pretty fascinating story of a company in a fast-paced and competitive market that continues to build into the future. Frank lays out some fascinating ideas about what kind of infrastructure we'll need in the U.S. for the adoption of electric vehicles to really come at scale. Things like electric real estate, the couple of spots in cities where it's actually possible to pull enough energy from the power grid to charge 50 or 100 electric vehicles at once, and what it takes to actually work with an electric company like Con Ed to get that done. Or maybe most interestingly, the idea that cars will become batteries on wheels that can move energy around the grid. I found this to be a fascinating conversation, so I hope you enjoy this episode with Frank Regg, founder and CEO of Revel. All right, Frank. Well, it is great to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on. To start, what is Revel and what do you do?
Yeah, Joe, thanks for having me this morning. When it comes to how we started Revel, you know, the story really goes back to 2018. And it really goes back to who I am as a founder in my past. Probably a lot of people don't know this about me, but my path to electric mobility was definitely an interesting one. And I actually worked as a chef here in New York City for about 5 years, around 2007 to 2012. And working as a chef in high-end New York City restaurants every single day, I would take my bike 6, 10, 12 miles to work and then bike back, you know, at 1, 2 a.m. after my shift, back to somewhere in the outer boroughs in Brooklyn and Queens where I lived. So literally, my life revolved around two-wheel transportation in New York City. And I just fell in love with it. And then you fast forward to 2018, I just come back from a trip overseas in Argentina where I just saw mopeds everywhere. And if you've ever been to Buenos Aires, you know that it is a moped city. And I don't know, some sort of light bulb went off in my head of why isn't this vehicle form factor in a city like New York? And that was January 2018, and I just ran with it. I got my co-founder on board, and we ended up launching a pilot with shared electric mopeds right here in Brooklyn 6 months later in July of 2018. So it's really a bit of, you know, personal history, love of two wheels and cities, and then just that experience of seeing mopeds in other cities, and why doesn't this work in the U.S.?
Okay, so you started as a chef in New York City. You're riding your bike to work. How do you then go from chef to founder of Revel, a large mobility moped business?
You make a lot of mistakes along the way. I think for us, it's you just get something in your head if this is an idea, and then you just got to have the grit and the persistence to just make it happen. I can't tell you how many headwinds we faced just in that first 6 months of idea in January 2018 to actually launching actual mopeds on the streets of New York that New Yorkers were renting and getting on and driving around New York City with. And you just take one problem at a time, because there are too many if you think about it, and you will just get overwhelmed. So one problem at a time, one foot in front of the other. And before you know it, you're launching a product in the streets of New York. But it's not easy. And obviously, we've grown the business a lot since then and have evolved beyond electric mopeds, especially in 2021. And I think that's just an evolution of when you live and breathe a sector, when you live and breathe electric vehicles, electric mobility 24/7, 7 days a week, you start to see where the opportunities are and where maybe you should be pointing your business. So for us in 2021, we launched the largest fast charging station in North America right here in Brooklyn that went live in June. And we have a lot more sites like that going live in 2022. And we also launched an all-electric, all-employee electric rideshare service here in New York City this past summer with 50 Tesla Ys. And we'll be expanding that service in 2022 as well. So started as an electric moped company, have really just expanded the platform beyond that into shared electric fleets and just building the electric charging infrastructure that cities need right now. And that whole vision just came from living and breathing it and doing it. Back in 2018, I wasn't thinking about an all-electric, all-employee rideshare service.
When you say electric charging stations, that's for Teslas, for electric vehicles larger than mopeds, like full-blown electric cars?
That's correct. So we built the largest fast charging station right here in Brooklyn this past summer, 25 fast chargers. And those are all for Teslas, but any brand of EV, not just Teslas. Our rideshare service, though, happens to be Teslas to start.
And then did you start by buying a couple mopeds and just renting them out?
It's funny. My co-founder, Paul, recently sent me a pic that was on his phone, and it was from January 2018. And it was me standing out front of the Vespa dealership here in Brooklyn. I don't know. It's a great question, right? Like, where do you start? I don't know. Yeah. Let's go to the Vespa dealership. See what's going on. Test ride some vehicles. Do they have anything else that's electric? It was as basic as that. So it was just a funny photo from, you know, 4.5 years ago now of just me standing outside the Vespa dealership. And I would say that's where the in-person research started, literally visiting dealerships.
And then what happened next? Did you buy a Vespa?
What happened next was we started to just map out, okay, here's every manufacturer that we found online through articles and our research. We need to reach out to every single one. And that's what we did. Manufacturers that you or I had never heard of until you started to do the research on mopeds and what's out there. Maybe they only sell in Spain right now. Okay, reach out to them. Do they have the license to sell in the US? This could be interesting. Research other shared electric moped operators that had launched in Europe. Try and reach out to those founders. Have a conversation. Try and learn. Then you have to understand the whole software side of the business as well. How are we actually going to do this? Are we going to white label, sort of outsource certain aspects of the technology just to get up and going? And then maybe bring that in-house later on, like we ended up doing. So really just mapping out the hardware landscape, the software landscape, how the two are going to come together. Talk to as many people as possible. We also put together a small advisory board. The former head of Car2Go here in North America was part of that advisory board. The former head of Citibike here in New York was part of that advisory board. For instance, I gave them some equity in the company to do that, to actually like have some skin in the game to really help us. And stuff like that really does help. Because when folks with that background send an email to the New York City DOT or make a connection to somebody, they will take your call. So I would say build a small advisory board, figure out the hardware and software landscape, what's the plan, how are we going to get this live by the summer? And then there's the whole fundraising aspect, which I could talk about as well, if that's interesting.
Yeah, actually, you scaled really fast, and which plays into the fundraising. How did that work?
So for us, when it came to fundraising, my co-founder and I, we had zero experience in raising money. We'd never done it before. So if you're a potential, you know, founder out there thinking about launching something, and you don't have fundraising experience, it's okay. Neither do we. You can figure it out. If we did, you can. For us, it was, we ended up raising about $1 million in an angel round from 57 different investors. 57.
Wow.
To put that money together to get off the ground. We ended up using a safe. I had no idea what a safe was before we did this. You know, you just do the research, you understand, okay, this seems like what people are doing, we'll use that. And just started having conversations. I had check sizes as small as, I think, $1,500 in an angel round. If you wanted to write a check into Revel, I will take whatever check size you can give. We went far and wide. You know, people we went to college with, high school with, brothers, whoever would invest. And then we started to get introductions to angel investors here in New York. And that's where some of the larger checks came, a 50, 100,000. I will also say for folks that are listening, there was a lot of no's along the way. A lot. You just got to be persistent.
Yeah, that's amazing. Especially since now you've raised, I think, another 25, 30 million on top of that. And then most recently, 125. And have scaled into a full-blown electric vehicle business. Think about where you are today compared to where you were then. What's the difference between what the vision was and where you actually are today and what the vision is going forward?
the vision we were raising, the angel round, the seed round, we raised a $4 million seed round fall of 2018, and we raised a $34 million Series A in the fall of 2019. So I would say the vision through definitely the seed round was we are growing our e-moped business. We're going to be the top e-moped operator in North America. We've got a lot of markets we need to get into and be a first mover and start to really build out our operations and our processes and scale. That was a vision. I would say through the Series A as well. Although by the time you get to the Series A, investors are starting to ask, what's next? Are you launching another product? Are you becoming a platform? Or what is sort of the larger vision as you start getting into the Series A? I would say by the time we got into the Series B, which is this latest round of $126 million, which was led by BlackRock, and Toyota also took a seat on the board, 2021 was a year for us where we really expanded on our vision. You know, I mentioned earlier, Joe, of started out shared electric mopeds, and then in 2021, you know what, let's extend this platform. Let's start building the EV infrastructure that shared fleets need in cities, or else this whole EV transition and future is just a pipe dream because there's no infrastructure. So unless somebody is starting to build the infrastructure at scale in cities that matter, the transition's not happening. So for me, it was just, it's not rocket science. Someone's got to go build the infrastructure. Let's go do it. But we're not just a charging company. We have an entire mobility side of the business. I think that's where we're very different from any other person in the market right now. For me, if you're going to be involved in charging the energy side of the world and you're not talking mobility, you're just talking about 2030. And if you're just talking mobility and you're not talking charging and energy, you're just talking 2030, right? And that's why everyone's sitting on the sidelines right now. And that's why there's no infrastructure in a city like New York. So for us, we're just combining the two. We're bringing that vision of expanding shared electric fleets. Now it's in rideshare. And we're bringing that vision to, we need to go build that infrastructure and pair it with our mobility side of the business, or else nothing's going to get done in 2022, right? So that's where we expanded our vision, just building that publicly accessible fast charging infrastructure in the urban core of cities at scale, pairing that with shared electric fleets, which right now is rideshare. For us, it makes perfect sense. And I think other investors see that too.
So if I was a Tesla owner in New York, it sounds like now you've opened a massive charging station in Brooklyn. But before that, where could I go to charge my Tesla?
It's funny because you bring up Tesla, right? So Tesla is probably the only vehicle in cities in the US that has a relatively reliable network. You know, Tesla has a real network of superchargers across this country. I think that's why they're going to lead on EV sales for a while. Because if you're a buyer, you're a consumer, you're thinking about what EV to buy, you're thinking, wow, Tesla's got this network of charging infrastructure that's proprietary, that's theirs. This makes a lot of sense. If you have another brand of EV, I don't know where you charge, Joe. There is no place in a city like New York. There's nothing. There's literally nothing. For those listening, there's level 3 charging, which is fast charging, where maybe you can charge your car in 15, 20, 25 minutes. Then there's level 2 charging, which is like a charging station at a Whole Foods that takes 10 hours to charge your car. To me, that's not infrastructure. That's like an amenity, right? So when you think about your question of like, where do you charge your car? If you're a Tesla owner, yeah, there's some charging stations around New York. And definitely once you leave New York, there's bigger stations. A lot of the stations though in New York, even for Tesla, you got to pay a parking garage fee before you even get access to the charger. So you kind of get double, you know, you got to pay twice. Mm-hmm. But if you own any other EV in cities in the US, man, there's really nothing, especially in New York. It's barren out there. If you look at the bigger picture here, Joe, you know, take a city like New York, there's 2 million vehicles here. Supposedly they're all going electric in the next 10 years. Mm. And there's not a charger in sight. There's nothing, right? So you'd understand why somebody like BlackRock and Toyota are leading a round of this size to the company that is going to be the leader in fast charging in the urban center of cities in the US. It's very simple because this is what we call a common sense business. Anyone that sees the big picture is like, oh my God, there is such a problem here. And here's the company that's solving that problem. Write the check. So we talk internally all the time that it's a common sense problem, common sense business. This is not that complicated.
Yeah. And it's almost like there's so much electrical grid that has to be built or charging grid that has to be built for these vehicles. If everything is going to go electric, that, I mean, it's a massive market, assuming that electrification does happen on the pace that we expect it to. Even if it doesn't happen on the pace we expect it to, if it happens at all, these need to be built.
Yeah. When you start taking metro areas around the US, even if you have conservative assumptions for EV adoption, conservative, like we can definitely beat these numbers, there's no question, but conservative. we are so far behind on the infrastructure piece, it's almost a joke. So far behind. You know, and another phrase we talk about internally a lot is energy real estate. Because I think people and listeners on this podcast need to understand, even if you want to put charging somewhere, that doesn't mean you can. Even if the landlord loves Revel, they love electric vehicles, and they want 12 chargers on their property. Okay, you got to talk to Con Edison to see, can I get 2 megawatts of power to this site? And most of the time, the answer is no. So where real estate meets energy and grid capacity, that's really the competitive moat here, right? Because even if you want charging, you see the future. This is something you know your building needs. That doesn't mean you can get it. So again, sort of another phrase we talk a lot internally is energy real estate. Being a first mover like we are in cities allows us to lock up those spots where real estate meets grid at scale. And we lock them up before other people do because they're all sitting on the sidelines, again, talking about 2030 and what they're going to do by 2030.
Yeah, you can't just plug these things into a wall. It's not a fish tank. You want to have 50 charged cars being able to be charged at once. You need to actually go to the energy company. Can you expand on that and what it actually takes to build one of these charging stations?
A lot of engineering has to be done before you ever even put pen to a lease. For instance, our first site in Brooklyn, we have contracted 7 megawatts of power. Just for comparison, a typical large like suburban house in the US is either 100 or 200 amps. So that's like 1/50th of the amount of power we have at one site, right? So we have a site with a ton of power. And just walking through a very specific example, which is our first site, even if you go to a site like that and you see the electrical cabinets and you see all the transformers and say, oh, okay, this site has X amount of power, this is great. You call up Con Edison or whoever the local utility is in that area, whether it's PG&E, let's say in Northern California or whoever, you say, hey, we're looking at the site for charging. They'll do an engineering study and come back to you in 30 days and say, yeah, that's great. They think they have 7 megawatts of power. We don't have the upstream connector to actually supply that amount of power to your site. It's really 1/20th of that. So again, a lot of landlords, a lot of folks in real estate think they have a certain amount of power. When you talk to utility, they say, yeah, that's nice. You don't. So a lot of work has to go into that relationship with the utility, figuring out what the power is, doing the engineering study. If the power isn't there, will the utility upgrade that power and on what kind of timeline? And then you have to go back to the landlord and say, hey, we might not get power to this site for 2 years. Do you still want to work out a lease with us? Are you willing to give us free rent for 2 years? So there's all the business terms, understanding how it works out with power. And then even once you strike the lease, the power's getting there or it's there already, then you have to go build this damn thing. So that requires zoning attorneys, architects, a lot of engineering. This is complicated stuff. And it could take months or even years in some sites.
Are you actually like tearing up streets in New York City, not you, but Con Edison, to put in larger wires to be able to carry that capacity to these locations? You know, if Con Edison is like, yeah, we'll upgrade that for you. That actually means like wires in the ground. This is not a software update.
The answer is it depends. You can imagine when you're talking to a landlord in a major city like New York or San Francisco, sometimes they don't want to wait 2 years for you to start paying rent if it's going to take 2 years for Con Edison or PG&E to rip up the street and get you power. So it kind of kills the deal. Some landlords are willing to wait. They say, you know what? Yes, I want power here. I want charging here. We can make the financial terms work. Work with Con Edison. Dig up the street. We're on a 2-year timeline, and that's okay. Obviously, the best sites are the sites where you already have the power. Con Edison confirms the power is there. You can start construction right away. And that site can be live in 4 or 5 months. So that's the best site. And then obviously the worst case scenario is it could take 2 years or more. Actually, the worst case scenario is just Con Edison says, we can't get you power there no matter what you say or do or how many years. It's just not happening. Huh. You can imagine what happens if they have to move a fire hydrant to get that power to you. What if they had to move a tree? So the second you start involving other agencies like DOT and FDNY, basically the deal is dead. It's not happening.
Have you studied gas stations and how they work, how they're built to understand how to do this? It actually seems like it would be pretty fundamentally different because gas stations, you know, a truck shows up and then they pour a lot of gas into a tank underground. Whereas you're not charging from a giant battery underground. You actually have to work with the grid system. But are there parallels there to how gas stations were built across the whole US to what you're trying to do today?
I would say we're looking at gas stations to understand, are there certain design features or attributes from the business model that make sense to apply to the EV charging, quote unquote, gas station of the future? So I would say the businesses are relatively separate, but a lot of times they're not, right? Because we're looking at sites right now to develop where you can call it, quote unquote, it's the gas station of the future. It's just a very large site with a lot of chargers. So instead of gas pumps that take 6 minutes to fill up your car, it's a EV fast charging station that'll take 20. So how does that change things? If it's not 6 minutes now and it's 20 minutes, what do we need to provide to that customer to make sure they want to use that station and sit there for 20 minutes? Or maybe they want to buy something else for 20 minutes. How do we drive more revenue in that case? I would also just take a step back, Joe, and just realize how bad the charging experience is right now in the United States. Anyone listening that owns an EV, you know, you show up to a charging site that's non-Tesla, and there might be one or two plugs only. And you show up, and maybe there's an internal combustion car just sitting in one parking spot, so blocking a plug, and the other plug is broken. And now what? Right? So the charging experience right now is just terrible. So one of the things that we're doing is simply just providing a much better experience by providing scale. So our first site is 25 chargers. You're going to get a charger. You're never going to show up right now and there's not going to be a charger available, right? So just a little thing like scale, oh my God, you just take the product experience and just, you know, 300% it sort of like how much better that experience is, and you didn't actually have to do much.
How do the unit economics work for a business like this? So the electric company, you know, the fact that they're willing to potentially get power to your site means that they're going to be making a lot of money on the transaction over time. Landlords are also interested, of course, and then, you know, you as a player. So how do the kind of how does the revenue break out across these different parties? And then how do you think about the unit economics of scale and maybe where they are today versus where they'll be when you get to scale?
So the reason why there's no infrastructure in cities in the US right now for EVs and electric vehicles is because unit economics don't make sense in the current business environment, because of the classic chicken or the egg problem. There's no infrastructure because there's no EVs yet, and there's not enough EVs, so there's no infrastructure, right? We're just like in this classic problem, right? There's not enough demand for supply, so there's no supply for demand. And that's exactly what we are solving here. So by building the infrastructure at scale, the reason why we're able to get financing is because we're bringing the mobility side of our business right alongside of it to providing that in-house demand to our own operations. Because you can imagine a lot of banks, a lot of financing sources don't want to give you a large check to build a very large site here in Brooklyn or Queens or some other city and hope and pray somebody shows up with an EV. So by scaling our mobility side of the business right alongside the infrastructure side of the business, it provides that base level of demand to now just make financial sense. And that's something, if you're just a charging company, so many folks struggle with, because you don't control sort of your own destiny. You don't have that demand source and everyone's looking for that demand. So it allows us to be a first mover and to go now. And then just, I guess, more granular in terms of unit economics, everything that we do in this business is around utilization. How much of the day is a fast charger plugged into a car and that car is paying us? It's pretty simple. And to pay for rent, to pay the electricity costs, to pay the O&M on the charger itself, you really need utilization of 25, 30% for fast chargers. So you're talking 6-8 hours a day that charger is plugged into a car and somebody's paying you. That's pretty high utilization. Think about that. So again, it goes back to why there is no infrastructure, because it's very hard to drive utilization like that in 2022, unless you're bringing some of your own demand in the form of your own business, which is what we're doing.
So you're building like two businesses in parallel here. You have the fleet business where you're actually building a fleet of electric trucks, I assume. I'll ask you about that next. But also the charging business, which will generate a lot of its revenue from the fleet business who's going to be paying you. So I guess that brings us to the fleet business. What is that? How does it work? And why would I want to rent your electric trucks as opposed to a truck from all the other trucking companies?
So we're not looking at electric trucks. We're using the rideshare business, the Tesla rideshare business as that fleet customer right alongside of it. And the reason why users are renting Revel Tesla rideshare vehicles right now in New York City, as opposed to an Uber or Lyft, it really goes back to consistency and reliability. And that's the thing we keep hearing from users. Since we're vertically integrated, the driver's an employee with a Revel uniform that we actually screened and trained and hired. The vehicle is ours and it's cleaned after every single shift, and you know exactly what you're getting into as a user. We control the tech, we control the brand, we control the infrastructure that it charges on. So we have a ton, we have 100% control of the entire product. So the thing we hear from users is, wow, okay, in a city like New York, you don't need to charge luxury pricing to have a service like this because pricing is high enough. Pricing is very rational for rideshare in a city like New York. So you're telling me for the same price as Uber or Lyft, I get into 100% Tesla from a company that's sending me the same car that's cleaned every single time with an employee driver. This is a slam dunk, of course. So that reliability, consistency, knowing exactly what you're getting, you're not going to get a car and then we cancel on you 4 minutes into the trip. Because guess what? We control the car, we control the driver, right? So again, this reliability, consistency, and the fact that we don't have to charge luxury pricing, it's the reason why it's so successful right now in New York and the reason why we're scaling. So it goes back to a lot of products, right? Everyone is thinking about how do you have vertical integration? How do you control every piece of your business? And that's exactly what we're doing with rideshare and charging.
So you're launching like a black car business, but with Teslas, which is actually kind of amazing to compete with Uber, which is actually kind of amazing because that's how Uber started, with a black car business, that super high-end customer experience. And then obviously that is not Uber today, but they have scaled to a massive company using that wedge.
Yeah. And the difference here is we're not as scared to actually build the infrastructure needed for the electric future. So we're able to go now and build now. All Uber does is talk about what they're going to do in 2030, but they're literally doing nothing now. And just the fact that we're able to control every piece of this product and have complete ownership of the product, and that creates that reliable, consistent experience that users are loving right now. And this is only going to work in major cities, right? Cities where there's rational pricing, where a 30-minute trip can be $35, $40. That's where the business makes sense and it's highly profitable.
So you're building these electric charging stations. You also have the Tesla ride-sharing business. And then the Tesla ride-sharing business and the Revel mopeds, how does that evolve over time? Where do you see that getting to? Does it become an Uber alternative long-term?
So we are scaling our rideshare business right along the infrastructure business. And yes, it is going to be competition against the incumbents. There's no question. And not just competition, but competition in the markets that they value the most and are the most profitable. Right? Yeah. And we also don't have this legacy incumbent gas-powered rideshare business we have to deal with. I have none of that. I don't have those chains. I can simply do the future, but do it now. So it's a great place to be.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
On the moped side of the business, this is really us always. We always want to make sure we have a product within that two-wheeled sector. I think it's important. And I think our users love it. And it's helped us build a really fun brand at the end of the day. We started out as an electric moped company. I think you see that in the culture. And I think you see that in our user base as well.
When did you decide to make this jump from the two-wheel electric business to full-blown ride-sharing and building out your own electric charging stations? Because that is a pretty big fundamental shift. I mean, you're launching two new businesses, but yeah, what did that shift look like for you and how did you come to that conclusion?
I would say for any founder that's listening and maybe thinking about their own business and new products, or maybe nobody wants to use the word pivot a bit, it is really hard. It is not easy. I remember having conversations with Paul, my co-founder, as early as December 2019, really thinking about where do we want to take our business? How do we want to extend our platform? Where's the future? And how do we really want to own that future? And it's a little scary when you start talking about ideas like this, but they're also really exciting. And it's where the world is going and you got to go with it. So for us, it just made perfect sense, but not easy. You have to get internal stakeholders on board. You have to get your board on board. You have to make sure investors are lined up. And you also have to execute out in the field and actually show that, yes, we've never built a charging station before, but our first station is going to be the largest in North America. We're going to do it right here in New York City. And I got a pipeline of projects right behind it launching in 2022. So a lot needs to go into that. It's not easy, but for us, it just was something we had to do.
Yeah, that is wild. It's like launching a new business all over again, but this time you have people watching over your shoulder who have major investments already that they want to protect.
I think to do something that we've done over the last year, it takes a lot of trust between the board and the management team. If you do not have absolute trust, what we've done in the last year would not happen dead stop.
We talked a little bit about the electrical companies and what it takes to, you know, supply power to a charging station like this. From the core power generation on through how power is delivered to homes and businesses, if we want to be able to get to electrification at scale across the US, does the electrical grid have to get fundamentally like overhauled and updated?
That is a very big question, but let me try and break it down for maybe listeners in terms of like how I think about things. So if you look at the grid right now, there's two major changes happening. A drive towards as close as possible to 100% renewables, but by doing that, you're making the grid more unstable. The sun always doesn't shine. The wind doesn't always blow. It is just inherently more unstable the more renewables you have. And the other piece of the grid is that we're moving away from centralized power resources. Like in New York, for instance, 20% of our power used to come from a nuclear plant in along the Hudson River. That got shut down last year. All right. One power resource supplying 20% of electricity in New York City got shut down. You have to make that up somehow. So the grid is going from a centralized, very centralized power resource heavy sort of distribution to much more distributed resources. So 100% renewable, centralized, and distributed. Those are like the two major themes happening right now. And then you think about our business and how I think about the future. Sometimes you'll hear people say like, oh, you're doing rideshare. So is it just, it's basically just Uber, but electric now. And that's someone who doesn't understand maybe the future and what we're really doing here. Because if you think about what we actually are, it's not electric rideshare. It really transforms the business model because we're essentially batteries or power or energy or whatever you want to call it that is now mobile in the urban core of a city. Not only is it mobile and we can move that energy around, we also own the infrastructure that connects to the grid. So if you think about it, we started with 50 Teslas. We're scaling that to several hundred shortly. You can imagine a couple of years, we're several, I don't know, thousand, who knows? Now you have batteries and energy going around the city, completely mobile, on wheels, able to connect to the grid when needed and supply energy either to the grid or take energy from the grid. So you talk about the future of the grid and the future of utilities and the future of where this world is going. It's not just electric rideshare. But it's hard to see that because it's a 7-10 year future. But you got to start now if you actually want that to be a reality in 2030. So that's how we see the grid in cities. It's not just electric rideshare. This is a company that is essentially putting energy on wheels and making it mobile around the city. It also happens to be a consumer mobility business. It also happens to be a charging business, right? But you got to think longer term here.
Yeah, that is a wild idea. So you're talking about essentially creating liquidity in the energy grid so that you now are the end point for all energy coming out in batteries that then are also mobile and you can expand. And then do you think long term you'll be able to have, you know, Teslas or trucks with huge batteries on them that drive around the city that essentially deliver power where it's needed? Just like another level of liquidity on top of the electrical grid, just something to make it more resilient, sign contracts with New York City. What does that look like?
I can't tell you how it looks like yet, right? Because it's not currently a business, right? Yeah. There's no way for us with a Tesla to contract with Con Ed and for us to give them power and to put power back onto the grid. Everyone's doing pilots. Hell, we're even doing one with Con Ed right now with a couple of Nissan Leafs, right? But you have to start setting your business up and see where the future is going to make this all a reality.
So you're doing a pilot right now with a couple of Nissans, you said. What does that look like?
So we're getting a little bit into details now, but for those that know Tesla, for instance, Tesla vehicles and the way the software and hardware are set up, they're not set up to actually inject power into the grid. So if you're charging a Tesla, you can only take power from the grid, but you can't actually send that power back to the grid. Nissan Leafs actually can. So it's the reason why, you know, we're doing a pilot with Nissan Leafs specifically. So again, a lot needs to happen on the technology side. Battery technology needs to get there. Regulatory landscape needs to get there. But this world is coming. There's no question. Because again, you have to think about the future. You have to think about 2 million vehicles going electric in 10, 15 years. The only way this works is bi-directional. You can't just take energy from the grid. You also have to put energy back into the grid. And if we start to own that infrastructure and that grid connection, you can see where this all goes.
That's super interesting. It never would have occurred to me. But obviously, that's why I'm not building this business.
I think also, you know, Joe, it's just important to keep in mind too, of course, I'm thinking about this vision. Of course, I'm thinking about that future. But we got to execute tomorrow. We got to execute next month. I got to show investors progress in July and August. I got to go raise another round at some point in the next, you know, call it 18 months, usual runway. So, of course, you always, and this is any founder, right? You have this vision, you know where you want to go, but you got to put one foot in the front of the other. You got to continue to show progress day in and day out, or else you're never going to get there. So it's a combination of the two things, right? Have that vision, know where you want to be in 2030. At the same time, what matters right now is tomorrow, next week, next board meeting. So it's a combination of those two traits that I think are really important for anyone thinking about starting a company.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear to me from this conversation that you are super tactical and focused on that execution piece. And ride sharing, I mean, the business you're in is just so hyper competitive. How do you deal with that?
It's part of a learning process I've gone through as CEO and I go through every single day here, right? I think the person I was in 2018 is different than the person I am now and will be different in 2025, 2026. Because I continuously just learn. And I think one of those learnings is constantly that tension of, I want things done yesterday. I think if you talk to anybody on my team, you will feel that. I want urgency, bias for action, get it done today. With the same time, everything I've learned over the last 4.5 years building this company, all the mistakes I've made, I'm also, I think, a much better listener now. I think I take feedback better from everybody. So it's this constant tension between execute, urgency, we need to go faster than everybody. And also, have we thought this through a little more? Are we sure this is the right path? Have we tested first? Maybe we should do X before we do Y. Let's talk this out. Let's talk to marketing first before, Frank, you make a decision. And I think that's just growing up as a CEO, growing up as a leader, really starting to mesh those two traits. Because it's also really important to have urgency and bias for action to execute and get things done. You got to have the other side too. And I think I'm learning how to do that better.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's amazing. I talk to a few founders a week, and most don't have the same level of pressure just from their businesses, from the competition, from everything that's going on, being public-facing to the same degree. SaaS businesses are probably a little bit easier to run. So
I joke with my team sometimes, you know, sometimes I just wish we were, I don't know, a VC-backed sneaker company selling through Instagram or something. It'd be so much easier than operating in the public right of way in New York City, talking to politicians and regulators on a daily basis. Not to mention Uber and Lyft down your throat.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's the other piece. I mean, New York City, everything from the actual mopeds, you were the first company to do that at scale ride sharing, to now full-blown ride sharing and building electric charging stations in Brooklyn. Like, this sounds like a massive undertaking just with the city government. What has that felt like for you?
I used to work in government. So I've had multiple careers already. After I was done with my culinary career, I actually went back for a master's in public policy. I worked at the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey for a while. So I think even back in 2018, we were starting this business, I've always had a good sense of what government means, what regulation means, what politics means. And because our business, as I mentioned earlier, operates in the public right of way, is very in your face, you can't ignore that piece. And if you ignore it, you will not be successful. So I just had that ingrained in me, I think just from my past experience, work. So even when we launched Mopeds in 2018, I was meeting with every local city council member that we were going to put mopeds in their district in. I was getting in front of them, telling them who we are as a company. We don't do the gig economy. We only hire W-2 employees. This is who we are. We're New Yorkers. Like, just having a conversation, making sure there's a face to this company. and not just some, you know, Silicon Valley startup that's faceless. So we had that back even in 2018, I think was part of our success. I think if we didn't do that, I don't know, we probably would have been shut down at some point. But we had the relationships, invested in those relationships, and it matters. Now as here we're sitting in 2022, those relationships matter even more. I'll give you a great example. There's about to be billions of dollars in federal money for charging infrastructure, about to funnel through states and cities and DOTs and energy departments and economic development departments. You better be well-liked. You better have relationships.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is, again, I think I mentioned this earlier, it's not rocket science. Like, this just makes sense. You better be well-liked. You better be known as a good operator in any city you're in, or else something like that. Guess what? You're not winning any of those contracts or those grants. I can tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, it makes so much sense, but it's amazing to hear you talk about it. My last question for everybody on the show is about your vision for the company, which we've been talking a lot about, but where would you like to see Revel as a bit, all of these businesses in 20 years?
I'm going to change your question because 20 years is just, it's really hard to think 20 years. I gave you guys a 10-year vision around, This is essentially energy on wheels in urban centers. Right? Yeah. That's how you have to think about this in a big picture perspective. Let's talk 3 or 5 years. We're sitting here in 3 years, 5 years. Revel, there is no question, is the fast charging infrastructure leader in the United States. There is no question. Anybody that wants to invest in the infrastructure leader for charging of electric vehicles in cities, write the check to Revel. That's where we're going to be in 3 to 5 years, right? Like, that's where we're going. One of the ways we get there is we are very much building infrastructure with mobility services in mind. Again, pairing the two worlds. If you're only in one world, you're just one of these people talking about 2030 and what you're going to do by then. And you're just sitting on the sidelines and you're not leasing sites and you're not building anything right now. So in 3 to 5 years, we are that leader in infrastructure in cities, leading the EV transition, out in front, doing it, not talking about it. And the other side of the coin, we are expanding our shared electric fleets to match that infrastructure. We're continuing to expand our mobility side of the business. Right now it's rideshare. You can imagine other forms of mobility after rideshare. That's how we see the business. 20 years? I don't know. 20 years, hopefully I'm on a beach or something.
Well, that is an awesome vision. I'm sure you will deserve a beach in 20 years. And I'm looking forward to, I have the Revel app. As soon as I get back to New York, I will have to try out one of these Tesla ride shares. Frank, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Appreciate it, Joe. Thanks.